All right, for those that are here, I know some people are kind of trickling in. I just want to welcome everybody to our Out of the Woods Threat Hunting podcast, our live edition. We also have a Discord server we run so that we can be interactive with the folks that are here. And we just really want to talk about some of the burning topics, threat hunting, security stuff, everything associated. With that, reminder, if you haven't joined the Discord server, you should see in the comments or sections of the webinar, webcast, whatever, you can get to the Discord server and participate. Like, we're going to talk on topics. If you guys ask questions, we'll try to answer them the best we can. You can make comments, you can add to the conversation. Feel free. We love the interaction. I think it also makes some of the conversations pretty interesting. But with that, we're going to dive into what we start with usually with these are the interesting artifacts that we like to bring to the table. And hopefully they're useful to you all out there. And you're kind of day to day. So, Lee, I think you have the first one.
Thanks, man. Yeah, so this actually came across my radar internally, but it's something pretty interesting. So it's called AI Detector. It's GPT-0.me. And just to give you a quick insight of what it looks like, you copy and paste your text in here and you click, scan, right? And I guess I should say this came about because, or I wanted to share this because, if you follow me on LinkedIn, if you follow me on Twitter, I do my best to try and make it as engaging as possible with as much information as I can, that's interesting, while still not trying to sound like a robot, like AI wrote it. So I'm constantly trying to keep the human in it, whereas I know AI could do a probably a lot better job than I. But I still don't want. I don't want someone to go past a post, look at it, and be like, "Oh God, that's that's from ChatGPT or something," right? So you can
Do you think you
actually
sound polished enough to sound like ChatGPT, is what you're saying?
that I am.
Yeah.
I'm like ChatGPT negative 4.0. But no. So So I saw this come across. And I was like, you know what? Let's take my posts, and I like to throw it in here, because, quite frankly, like I said, I'm trying to stay away from that robotic, repetitive nonsense. Now I try to structure my posts the same way, summary, kind of go into the interesting artifacts or like the significant information. And then the third section is like the provide value kind of part where I'll talk about hunting possibilities, detection possibilities, behaviors, and so on, which is fine because it's just the way I structure it. But I never want to sound robotic. So I like coming here and dropping my text in here. But what you could do revert, or that's the way I use it, which is probably always the opposite of way people use it. So if you wanted to, you could take my posts that I work, if you're following me or following anyone else, and drop it in here and say, oh, let's take a look that, was this written by a human or was it written by ChatGPT? And I actually give you examples like if you click on it, it'll show you what the score is. So, like, they'll say, we're pretty confident this text was AI generated. They don't know exactly which wrote it. But, you throw in human, and then you can see they're like, yeah, we're pretty high confident. Maybe there's some AI in there, 0% mixed, and so on. But it was just this nice little tool that I came across to kind of keep me grounded and focused, but also to check that I'm not, after reading all these articles and reading all these posts that I do or that I read and research, that I'm not starting to sound like that. If that makes sense. Yeah, just a little fun little tool that I found.
Yeah.
So I actually was brought to my attention, I should say. Actually, I can't take that credit.
I think it's interesting the approach you took when you found the tool versus, when you shared the tool of Medium where my head went. Because, one of the big things that always comes up with the whole AI language model stuff is the social engineering aspect. I was thinking, oh, well, this would be interesting. Like, if you actually were suspect of, I got this really weird email. can I tell if it even looks like it's AI generated or from a human? And the fact that it highlights sections and, you know, what you learn from social engineering, like if something sounds urgent or important or, you know, act now. And, you know, that's part of the area that was highlighted as AI possibly generated. How much would be like, oh, that's really interesting. Like this doesn't even seem like it's written by a person. And on top of it's trying to get me to do things from like a sanity check or even just kind of investigation or analysis perspective. So my head kind of went there, but then I was also kind of curious because with language models existing as long as they have now and how much they're being utilized and going forward, is there going to be a point when people get used to like that structure? Because as youth uses it and grows up with it, are they going to talk more like these AI bots, which I mean, might be better, right? I mean, might sound more educated in some aspects, but you know, will this tool become less effective over time? I guess is where my head was going. I don't know if you had any similar thoughts, Tom.
No, I mean, mostly the things you talked about. I mean, I think this is pretty cool to easily leverage to check the, you know, what's been written by AI, but I, you know, mostly I'm here for the evolution, and I'm gonna go ahead and look at Lee and Sam along for the ride of the evolution of becoming a bit of a, you know, cybernetic human and being able to fine tune or polish yourself and or keep it help keep you accountable. But yeah, no, this is pretty cool, Lee. Thanks for sharing this.
Yeah.
No problem. And you actually, like, I find it ironic because if it's still out there scanning and, you know, training off of human created materials, at what point will I, like, not that I'm going to influence ChatGPT to a point where everyone will start sounding like me, but what will happen when the day comes where I drop my normal human written in there and it's like, oh yeah, that sounds like AI. It's so trained and you're so you don't vary in any of your delivery now you sound like an AI bot.
That's how you know you made it, you know.
That's the rival.
ChatGPT Lee.
Cool. So I don't know if you want to throw up the thing I found that I wanted to share. So it's the atomicgen.io. What it is basically, if you're familiar with Canary Red's Atomics, you know, it's an emulation framework. And we use in threat hunting emulation all the time, right? Because we want to validate visibility. We want to be able to have things to hunt for as we're testing hypothesis and so forth. And, you know, one of the development processes, all right, how do we do this? How do we leverage this? And I am very familiar with Atomic Red in general, but I don't do a lot of the writing of it or the structuring of it. And this tool, it's just kind of an easy way to get formatting. Like, it gets you off the ground if you've never used it. You can pretty much type in the core components and it'll format it in a way where then you can kind of just run some basic stuff and you can add to it to be able to do those emulations. So I thought it was a great way to kind of like break the ice for people that have never used it and also kind of get familiar with it, because I do think it's a very convenient thing. Now with Atomic Red, it's a PowerShell driven framework. So, you know, depending on how you're using it, you're going to need to make sure to have enough PowerShell privileges and I wouldn't say a very deep understanding of PowerShell, but if you run into any issues, knowing PowerShell definitely helps as well. But it was a really cool, fascinating tool that I actually didn't find. It was someone on our team who posted it, and I was like, well, this is great. I definitely want to talk about it here. So I just wanted to bring it to people's attention. So if they find it useful, they now have something they can kind of leverage to kind of go down that path a little bit. Okay. So I was curious what you guys thought.
Actually, I saw this and I liked it. So my question to you is, and we're probably going to tempt the demo gods right now. Could you walk me through? Yeah, dangerous stuff, right? Could you walk me through this? And while I'm inputting the stuff, how you would apply this to what you're doing?
Sure. I actually did a test and I'm wondering if I even know where the data is for that. But in the case I don't have the data specifically, you basically can, you know, you put your title and as you type in, it actually starts creating it. So I, you know, the question came to me with someone else on the team. It was like, oh man, this is a great place for them to harvest data to build emulations. Well, unless they're doing something savvy, it looks like it's a kind of a live freeform interaction. So I don't know how much they're actually collecting on the back end. There are buttons you press, right, to download or copy or whatever. So maybe some of the interaction that way pulls it down. But you basically can do your basic title. If you type things in the description, it adds to that too. So the documentation can kind of be part of it. You pick the environment and some of the variables of what it is you want to be executing. Yeah, for instance, your attack commands. You can do your ping, and there it goes. That's what will be executed. And then, you know, for more complex stuff, like you can basically do like PowerShell-C or CMD, was it /C, and then put your command in quotations, and then you can run something a little more complex or like a script block or whatever, and it should execute pretty easily. And then, you know, any kind of cleanup commands, you throw them in there, they build it as well. So it builds the basic YAML. So the structure of Atomic Red is YAML. And that's kind of what it's building for you. And then you can kind of copy that out and you at least have a starting block. And that's what I think what's great about these tools is how do you get started? It really, I think, helps a lot that way.
So this would be what's in the configuration file based on the Atomic Red team test. And when you would say use the Atomic PowerShell ping activity, this is what will happen.
Yeah, and there's like what, invoke Atomic, and then you like point to the Atomic that you wrote, which would be this file, and then it basically runs it within the framework. That's kind of how that works.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so hopefully others will find it useful.
And a little more complex than this. This will drain you. That's a big time to learn. Well, thank you for sharing that. Tom, what did you bring to the table?
Oh, man, I've got to top you guys. So, yeah, Lee, if you don't mind throwing that up, that link in, and just a quick screen share. You don't necessarily have to go through. So I kind of stumbled across this in a bit of my digging for other things. It's a little bit of an older like repository. It's been out there. I think I tracked it back to about 5 years looking at their GitHub repo. But it's called securitydatasets.com. And what I thought was really cool and interesting from this is basically they give you a nice repository of data sets for like attack simulations. You can go and take and execute in your environment. There's a handful of things out there for AWS. There's a few things for the Linux repo, and then there's quite a bit for the Windows side. But what was really kind of stand out to me is kind of the way it's all organized. So if you kind of go into any one of the given attacks, it's broken out by MITRE, so it's kind of structured in that way, so it should be familiar to most. It should be, right? But you go in and you dig in and you can kind of see like, you know, the creation time, the contributors, etc., you know, kind of tags for the types of attack, you know, the MITRE tactics and technique labels, descriptions and such, and then it gives you the link to the repo download for the data set, and it kind of gives you the walkthrough of, you know, what it's doing, how to execute it, all those things. But ultimately, like, having a repo like this, for my mindset, could be very useful for folks. It didn't seem to be something that's necessarily a dead repo when you kind of look at their tracks for commits and stuff on the on the GitHub side. They're updating it periodically. The most recent update was last year, but you can kind of see like all the different things that they've added throughout time. You know, it's like in year increments and such, so it seems to be relatively living. But even without that, the data sets that are sitting there I thought were very interesting. So, you know, if you're looking to throw data in your environment, to kind of build detections around, or, you know, practice or train, you know, security professionals, you could use this data scientists, because, you know, there's labeled and unlabeled data inside of this. So if you're working to train models in your group, you know, there's some value there. Even down to what they had mentioned in their GitHub, which I thought was interesting. I didn't initially think about this, but maybe, you know, you want to leverage some data sets to build a capture the flag type of event, maybe a local thing or whatever. I thought that was pretty neat. So this was kind of a cool find. I definitely bookmarked this for for some lab play around for the future, because I think it's interesting. I'm hoping that they continue to add to it. And it was just cool seeing this, an open source repo for things like this. So, you know, novice or experienced folks can kind of dive in and get some value out of it.
I love the fact that it covers behaviors. And I mean, you know, if you've listened to this podcast or you've joined us before, you know I love MITRE and will map everything I can to it if possible. Simply because it's easy to understand, right? Granted, there are ways to misuse MITRE. You know, saying we have MITRE coverage for a certain tactic or technique may lead to a false sense of, you know, security, where, you know, say, hey, you know, we've covered this technique, but have you covered it all the way is always the question. Which, you know, side topic. But, you know, anything we can relate to something that's easily understood and known to the community in general, MITRE is it. And it just paints the pictures and behaviors. But the fact that this hasn't been modified since, what, 2020, and looking at this, you know, like, this is still, like, the attack itself and the commands are still highly relevant. Right. And not to get too far off the path of this great resource, but it's just, that's why we got to talk about behaviors. That's why we love talking about behaviors, is because they are relevant. Whereas an IOC will expire in an hour, a day, a month. These things stand the test of time. Now I'll get off my threat hunting high horse.
No, stay on that though, Lee, because we see that every day in all the work we do, right? We're talking about it constantly, how it's the same things over and over again. I know Paulie's got his golden parachute of the single character files or executables, and it's just, you know, the attackers aren't going to change. They're not going to change what works, and if it works, they're going to keep it going, right?
You put that in Lee's tool, it'll say written by a human, single character filed.
So, okay, actually, funny segue, or not segue, backtrack. I busted out ChatGPT. I was like, let's figure this out. I was like, hey, write me a script that just does a bunch of discovery stuff, right?
Huh?
And I dropped it in GPT-0. What did you think I found?
Oh, it was totally written by AI. I didn't know it. What?
Wow. Interesting.
All right. So I lose confidence only because of this perspective. No one documents or does documentation that well in any scripting with all the comments everywhere. And the fact that it thinks a human does that blows me away.
So, please do not take this as a negative review or...
It's probably looking more like paragraph stuff, not like code, right?
But figure out what's going on here. Would best practices be to document a script like this?
I mean, I would think so, but no one does it.
No one does it, right? And that's the disconnect, that this may have, like, during the whole, like, you know, scanning and, you know, ingesting and stuff, that it may have run across those resources that say, hey, it's always beneficial to comment in your script. So maybe it is saying, well, you know what, we're kind of
just for it. I think it's you're just thinking for like free form and like article based kind of stuff, or research based, maybe, my guess.
But it does say we're uncertain about the document. If they would have to classify it, they classify it like that.
Barely, though.
I found that pretty interesting. That, I mean, that's exactly it.
Well, you're helping training the model, Lee.
Yeah. Or, you know, Lee's doing what Lee does. He's just breaking the model.
Intake.
Right? Maybe I should give it a thumbs down.
So, yeah, back to what Tom had, though, You know, when you said, you know me, I always like to, you know, tie things to MITRE and use MITRE. Well, if you know me, I love data. So this is like a gold mine for me. But what it made me think about, which I think is also like really important in a lot of, you know, SecOps areas, is data dictionaries, right? Like very, I wouldn't say very few, but there's a lot of people that don't do data dictionaries with the data they collect to kind of define, you know, what is this field? What kind of data is it in? How is it utilized? All that kind of stuff, so that it becomes easier for detection engineering. It becomes easier to understand what you're looking at if you're just looking at the data raw or whatever. And this is almost documented in a way where it's like a data dictionary for behaviors, if that makes any sense. It's kind of how I was thinking about this, where it's like it's got like all
Yeah,
the
that makes sense.
components of, right, like it's got like the adversary perspective, it's got like what the data is kind of about, you know, what's associated with. So I was like, man, if they can really kind of dial that in exactly to kind of how I described it, or, you know, someone forks it, does something similar, man, that would be like a really, really cool repository to go along with a data dictionary, right? Like, and then you could, if you were able to say, here's my data dictionary and here's the behavioral dictionary, how do those things link up? And then you apply like what coverages do I have to those things? Like that is a really powerful data point to have. So that's kind of where my head went, just because I always go down the data path, right? Associations of data.
Yeah, I hope it evolves. And there is also, you know, opportunity in there, at least from the stuff that I was reading through the repo, to contribute to it. And they kind of openly welcome the main contributors, openly welcome people to add to the, you know, to the library there. And it's pretty neat. I hope it evolves. I hope it keeps going. I hope you see more incremental adds.
Yeah, definitely. So before we jump into the main topic, first I want we usually do like a brief introduction of ourselves. So I'm gonna like kind of pause here for us to do that. So that anyone's joining that doesn't really know us that well, we could do that. We usually do it a little sooner. And then I'll kind of tee off what it is we're gonna really dig into. But me, myself, I'm Scott Poley. If you haven't heard of, they always either call me Scott or Poley. And I've been threat hunting for as a title for 3 years now with Intel 471. But I've also run security operations centers, built security operations centers, done and helped run cyber exercises. I mean, the gambit of cyber everything for the past, I don't know, 15, almost 20 years, I guess. It's been a long time. So I like to talk security. I like to get into it, and it's just a passion of mine. So hopefully you guys pick up on that part. I might not be the best at everything, but I just love learning things. So me in a nutshell, I'll pass it to you, Lee.
Yeah, so Pulley actually trained me in my first security operations center. So I was working under there, drinking from the fire hose for the first 3-ish years. Discovered Sysvon, and this, I guess, the story ends with me being here. Dedicated threat hunter for about 4 years now. Just love data, love event logs, love the tools that can create the visibility and give us that those artifacts that we can find. I love running the workshops that we do. I love help training the community as well. It's just a passion. I really don't talk well about anything else. You talk get me talking about a job like my job though. And I hope you're ready, but I'll pass on to Tom.
And I'm Tom Castura. I've been in the security field now about 11 years. You know, I really, really love this field. When I got into it initially, I didn't realize I was a threat hunter, but you know, my very first gig as a security analyst, I got sat down in a brand new SOC and they said, "Hey, go find stuff." And I didn't understand at that time, or even until, you know, a handful of years later, that that's actually what I was doing. Done a lot of different things in security, from the analyst side, engineer side, management, running the SOC, helping develop different capabilities, and just really, like, these guys really love this stuff, and you know, we love talking about this, so hopefully everyone that's listening can, you know, just pick a piece or two away, and it might help you, might encourage you, might make you think about something different. That's how I try to attack it anytime anyone's talking security. You know, what can I pick up on, what can I get better at? But yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, hopefully, you know, people realize that, you know, we're just people that just like and care about it, and we're not trying to be better than anybody. So everything we say, if you don't agree with, it's okay, because we might be actually wrong. Just hopefully it's just fruitful conversation.
Actually, we encourage you to fact check us along the way.
Yeah, please do. So as we kind of talk through this, if anyone wants to add questions or comments, feel free. But really, this is like the second conversation, because the first one we covered so much, but we were kind of started on the what's the journey of a threat hunter. And so we kind of started through the process of talking about what is it like at the beginning of trying to become a threat hunter? What does it mean? What is it you're doing? Hurdles, whatever. And then kind of getting to what is the grind now that you are a threat hunter? Well, what are the things to consider? What things you should be looking for? They get to finish on the outcomes. So now we kind of dedicated this whole episode to kind of talk through the perfect outcome. And because we now have a little more time, we've expanded a little bit. So it's really the perfect outcome from multiple perspectives. The perspectives we're going to try to talk to is like from the company's perspective, from the leadership perspective, to across the whole organization when it comes to other teams, from just security operations, and then kind of the outcome or the perspective of the threat hunter themselves, like what's the perfect outcome. And so we grouped them up in this kind of way. There's going to be overlap, obviously, and everyone's going to kind of think about where the answers best fit or the perspectives. But it's really just to kind of open up to trying to think about this problem or solution in this way, so that people are better prepared for what are they working towards, what do they need to prove, show, all those types of things. They hopefully will be beneficial. So with that, we'll start with basically the company's perspective, right? So I think, Lee, you've got kind of the leading question here.
That is correct. So from a company perspective, and especially with an outcome, what goal or solution does threat hunting provide to the company? So if you were going to bring threat hunting or already have threat hunting to the table, and you're getting questions from C-suites or stakeholders in general are saying, hey, justify this. Why are we doing this? What, how would you answer?
Yeah, so when I look at this, it's always interesting to look at from this perspective, because when we are in the grind or at that level, we're like the threat hunter. It's really hard to think about the value at that highest level, where there's people that sit at that level that don't really care about any of the security stuff the way we do. Like, they don't care how it happens. They just care about, is the business running? Is the business making revenue? What are the things we're doing to reduce the risk so the business can continue to run like it should, right? And so that's kind of the perspective that I think people should really be looking at. How do we talk about threat hunting at that level? What's the outcome that we should see at that level? And I kind of have some points to bring up. One is obviously, depending on your security operation in general, people always typically buy cyber insurance, right? And the more you can show your management of your environment and how you handle or manage your security, usually can contribute to what rates you get for cyber insurance and what kind of deposit or a down payment. Deductible, that's the word I'm looking for, that you may be responsible for as part of those negotiations. And I think in some capacity, if you have a mature or threat hunting as part of your operation, you can help lower those rates or potentially that deductible. So already there's potentially some cost savings from just something as simple as that, right? But the other thing is, a lot of times, from a security perspective, you're buying consumer things, right? And those consumer things aren't really tailored to your company specifically. Like, they're like looking at threats in general. Threat hunting is one of those things that kind of addresses that. So you can basically have that customized security team, which is your threat hunters, looking at company processes, the processes that make money. And I know other security teams do this as well, but I think this is kind of like a priority. It should be of threat hunters in general. And then another bullet point to bring up is improved instant response readiness. It's kind of how, call it. Like, since you're proactively doing things with threat hunting, you are increasing your readiness, right? As far as, can we respond to incidents faster? Which can reduce potential financial costs, right? If you have an incident, but you can resolve it quicker or get a handle on it quicker, impact is less. So that's how you had that conversation around that. See, and then some companies, I think depending on the type of company it is, I would say you could kind of add some competitive advantage. And I say this in a way where how many times are people worried about third-party risk, right? If we use this company, how does that add risk to our portfolio? If something happens to them, how does it impact us? And depending on what services you provide and things like that, it might speak well if you have a competent security part of your operation or organization, and threat hunting is a part of it. And then you can also talk about how threat hunting is specific to some of those company processes, like I mentioned before. So it reduces the risk on your customers, for instance, because they have specific things they're looking for from that perspective. I think those are really big from how do you help sell your company? How do you reduce costs in your company? And that's kind of like, I think the goals there, right? As perfect outcomes are things that address those things. And I brought up some of those points. So yeah, I'll kind of pause there for anything you guys have to comment or even ask as opposed to that.
Yeah, just adding on to that, I think there's a couple things too, when you look at it from the company's perspective. They're, generally, I would think from a company's perspective, they're looking at bottom line. What are you saving? What's, cost benefit right. analysis, all of that stuff. But I think there's also some notches there too. Part of this kind of goes into the cost benefit where, you talked about the insurance thing, but I'm thinking also like what a threat hunt capability can do for things like compliance measures, right? Say a medical or financial or energy, you're dealing with some of these high level potential for high fines, compliance issues, the threat hunting really does close the gap. I've experienced that firsthand. And, I think even, maybe a smaller one to think about there too is threat hunting still relatively in its infancy, as far as, adoption across industry, at least it feels that way from my perspective. For a lot of orgs. Yeah. And a lot of people are getting into it and it's great. And I think too, a company can look at it as a sign of maturity. I think it's a way to talk about the strength of your security department, even if you're just starting in the transition to having like a legitimate threat hunting program in your company or in your security department. It still does speak to the volume that you're at that level to be able to go after those steps, right? So you've kind of like moved through a lot of the growing pains of building a security org or a SecOps or something like that. And now you're able to go to this place where you're starting to point towards proactive, you're starting to point towards initiative, right? Instead of just being reactive. So there's a couple things there, I think, from a company perspective, they can really, stitch to the value of having a threat hunting program.
Yeah.
No, I think as a company, you got to realize what threat hunting is doing. Like Tom was saying, this is approaching identifying adversarial activity in your environment in a different way. And not to tread on too many topics in the future, but you got to realize that there's a time and place for IOCs. There's a time and place for detection engineering. And that gap in between the two is really threat hunting. And what I mean by that is, threat hunters are digging into, through structured and unstructured hunts, they're digging into the data, they're digging into the environment. And their goal is to find anomalies or potentially malicious activity. And the fact that threat hunting is starting to get almost like a seat at the table, like cybersecurity in general has in the past couple years, it's starting to look good and it's starting to look like companies are starting to understand the need for threat hunting. And I hope that continues to bloom simply because of the information that comes with it.
So yeah, like all the things you guys are saying, I think make a ton of sense. And that's why, I think mission statements are really important for teams for a number of reasons. One, I think they prevent scope creep so that, your team can be more focused and successful. But I also feel like then if you do have where you work with other teams and maybe there's not as fruitful based on some of those actions, you can still fall back to, well, that's not our core function. So we can assist where we can, but as long as we're doing our core function well, then it's a success as far as the program goes. So if you guys, had to pick a mission statement for threat hunting, what would it be for you and why?
So I'll start on this one, and I'll make it simple, like, a couple words with a handful of exclamation points. Find it. And what I mean by that is I see personally, and I'm gonna put myself out on an island a little bit here, maybe, but I think personally, from my experience, my passion, my interest with security, that threat hunting is and can be, and I see it fundamentally as part of the glue of your security org. Because of what it can provide, whether directly or indirectly. So when you talk about, when I say find it as the mission statement, I want my threat hunt team out there digging through the data. I want them understanding how to, how to contribute that data to our org, how to prioritize what's more critical versus not. So they start to understand the environment more. Understanding where we have gaps. So let's say we're going after a specific threat hunt. We just don't have the visibility. That is a huge win that comes out of threat hunting all the time. Things that could be passed off from finds to a detection engineering standpoint. So you can bolster your posture to find this stuff later. And everything in between, like I had mentioned, the gaps you can close for things like compliance measures. And so what I'm really saying here is I say find it because I think the threat hunting team can really be the glue that stitches a lot of the security departments, operations, policy, everything kind of together to kind of show the actual data sets in front of people that are making decisions. They can really help bolster that. So my mission statement's simple: find it. What about you?
I'm gonna expand on Tom's, and I might be stealing this from resources, but I'm gonna say find the bad. Not to just one up Tom. I do that every day. It's just what I do. Just kidding. He humbles me on a constant
I know my
basis.
place. I know my place. I know my place.
No, that as quick backstory, I guess. Well, I worked with Tom as well whenever I was working for Poli, and sometimes he would pop his head across the desk and just blurt out an idea that blew my mind. He's like, "What if we look at it like this way?" And I was like, "My God." Anyway, so backstory. But anyway, so find the bad, right? Because we know detection engineering exists. We know we got our security operations center who's relying on these highly accurate. High fidelity detections and alerts to trigger so that they know something is bad and they're going to dig through. We know that adversaries are using living off the land binaries, blending in with the traffic to bypass those things now. But at the same time, what really threat hunting, or how I believe threat hunting bridges the gap between CTI and security operations. Is that it is an intel focus or intel driven process that, well, I guess depending on if it's a structured or unstructured hunt, you decide where you're going. But if it's a structured hunt and you're finding the bad, the question might be, well, what bad? And that's where CTI comes into play, and intel's like, hey, whether you're a customer, whether you're a service or whatever. It's like, hey, these people and this adversarial group lives on my threat landscape. Here's the intel about them. Here's a bunch of IOCs, and here's a bunch of behaviors. How can you find the bag? And of course, kind of pass the IOCs back over to the security operations center, if that's their role, quick instant response, quick wins. Then the threat hunting takes that intel, makes it actionable. And finds the bad. That bridge, and I say it because I truly think that CTI, security operations, and threat hunting should work together in harmony in a beautiful utopia, right? Because of their different roles, because of their different visibilities and their different mission statements. But finding the bad with intel, understanding your users, understanding your environment is all highly valuable information.
So I spent a long time trying to figure out the perfect words. So my mind's a little wordy. So I'll throw it in Discord so people can read it, because it's a lot to unpack there. But I basically put it like this: to drive organizational and security operations maturity by proactively uncovering and mitigating hidden threats, enhancing defenses through behavioral insights, and continuous improvement. And so what does that really mean? That really comes down to, I really think that a lot of threat hunting has to do with maturity, or maturing things, as far as it's one of its main functions. And we talk about like finding the bad, but I think what makes threat hunting interesting is you're not just focusing on just bad, you're focusing on what really is hidden, you know, things that have already gotten past things. So it's like a different way to look at threats. And by doing these things, you're going to be continuously improving the environment, improving your understanding, insights to things. So I just think that in a nutshell can give threat hunting programs a lot of legs, but also can keep the focus tight enough so that it doesn't come into, well, what if you don't find something, right? There's more to it than that. So that's kind of where I went.
Oh, that's pretty good. So, you know, I'll kind of catapult into another question here. You know, what do you guys think validates that a threat hunting program is working for a company? And I'm gonna throw you a curveball here. Let's exclude just finding malicious things. Let's think outside of that, because then we know that's a main target. But what else can help validate that threat hunt program is working?
Well, I mean, from the technical aspect, I would think that, I mean, the easy win, you found malicious activity.
And you got to think of it too. We're talking like company level, so.
Oh, then I shouldn't be talking. You guys let me talk. I'll let you take this one, Puller, then, because I'll say high level technical stuff or high level company. Yeah, you both were in managerial positions. You know this better than I do. So I'm going to just.
Well, yeah. So like, I think it kind of goes from some of the points I previously made, right? Like there's just the cost savings in general from like reduced incident costs or optimized cyber insurance premiums that already can show value without finding maliciousness, right? One of the other things too is data-driven decisions, right? If there's anything that is a value is when it comes to threat hunting, because you're proactively doing things, interacting with data, when you make recommendations or you have conversations, you almost always have data behind everything you talk about versus speculation or assumptions or stuff that's like the water cooler talk that drives some conversations, right? I think that adds a whole nother level of value to a company, especially if they're talking about, you know, data-driven decisions when it comes to onboarding new technologies that could add risks to the environment, or potentially, you know, how we make security operation better. So that kind of gives you like kind of when I talk about adding new technologies to the business, you know, strategic business enablements, it's kind of what that kind of falls under, which could be a big thing. And then the other thing that I think is a big add to, I would say, would be cultural shift. You know, one of the things that I think hurt a lot of security-based things, and sometimes just culturally within technology environments in general, is they're often not proactive in the mindset. It's often let's set up all these alerts to respond to when things break or when things go wrong, versus how do we get better and how do we know what to look for before that happens, right? And I feel like threat hunting kind of adds a layer of that proactive security mindset, but it's that proactive like culture that also can cause a lot of cross departmental engagement, collaboration as well. So I think that cultural shift's a big add to say, hey, it's working because we're seeing things like this occurring. If that helps.
Yeah. And just adding a small one on that, you know, I think this is, Gonna sound ridiculous, but if you know, you know. Threat hunting programs really do organically provide pretty solid data sets that can paint pretty graphs. So if you know, you know. And I think like there's ways to just organically through the efforts of standing up and maturing a threat hunt program to really show how that path is being walked, to show that value to the company just organically because of the data sets you can get. So that's a little open-ended, but I know we're going to talk about more of those points as we're going to go forward. But that's just a little add to that I think is, a company can easily see, because you can distribute the information of the growth of that program, in my opinion, relatively easy to where, the upper echelons, the C-suite folks, all the people that are up the chain that aren't in the day-to-day or in the grind, they can digest what's happening and what value they're getting. So, I think that's a point worth mentioning.
Okay, so we're talking about maturing. We're talking about leadership, understanding, or your company coming together and understanding what, threat hunting is. Great. Now, let me play, the lower tier guy. But if I'm gonna try to explain and communicate to leadership that, hey, this is working, what do they need to know, or what should I expect them, or what should I expect them to think they need to know to show these good outcomes from threat hunting?
So are you kind of bridging into the next like silo or whatever you want to call it topic?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because you're kind of going from a hey as a business to now the people that run the business, because they're kind of like two perspectives, because one is I would say there's no like emotions or assumptions or things involved when it comes to a company. A company is to make money and needs to be successful. It's kind of easy. Leadership sometimes needs to be able to have all the supporting evidence and ways to have that conversation. So when I was kind of looking at it from a how do I talk to top leaders or things I should consider, one was, it's always cost savings is always a big one, right? So when we say like reduce incident response costs, because we're able to discover or stop threats before they become a full-scale incident. So that's something you can potentially measure, right? Like how many threats do you resolve that you find before you have to have a full-on incident response call, everybody on all hands type scenario. It's something good to like look at from that perspective. Obviously, you can quantify the premium cost with insurance, like we discussed before, pretty easily. But there's other things like enhancing, visibility. You can kind of talk to, hey, we're able to reduce the unknown unknowns, right? Like, what does that mean? Well, because you're looking for hidden threats, that allows you to look for places that you can't build detections, right? So I know like sometimes people are like, how do you quantify unknown unknowns? I kind of look at it from a perspective of if you're able to look for behaviors and things that may or may not be known, it could be hypotheses that are just like, yeah, this could happen or this could work this way. But even if I look at unknowns being things that you can't build detections because you can't just respond to a million alerts in one day, right? So you might kind of know about it, but it's unknown because you can't monitor it. I consider that still an unknown, and threat hunting kind of fills that gap. So you can say, how many of those do we address that we cannot do in any other capacity, right? I think it's a great thing. Also, high fidelity alerts kind of come out of that, and you can kind of measure that a little bit. One of the things that I think is interesting from a leadership perspective, you're talking like really senior leaders, people always talk about dwell time. It's like my least favorite number to talk about because it's really hard to like measure, but it's one of those things that I think is very effective if you're looking at, because threat hunting, you usually walk things backwards and forwards from things that you're investigating or looking at. This is when it's important to have those annual or monthly or quarterly reports where they talk about dwell time from a large perspective, where they survey like 60 or plus, companies, and they determine average dwell time. That's how you have to compare to that. You never would say we reduced our dwell time. Like I would never use dwell time against yourself. like use your numbers, except for comparing to others, because that's the only value in it, right? Like, hey, we're 50% less than the average dwell time of the world, right? That's where that metric becomes effective. Fewer security incidents may be something you can consider, but that's also hard because you can't control that. You know, operational resilience, you know, one of the things that you can talk to leaders about is how many, how often has business been interrupted by anything that you can tailor that. So like, for instance, let's say you stop something that you can tie back to, say, a ransomware group. Well, you know that's supposed to cause business interruptions, right? But if you know from threat intel this is associated with ransomware or tactics that are similar to that of ransomware groups in general, so you can make a high confidence assessment of that, that's a really powerful statement too. Like, hey, we discovered some of these activities that are very common with ransomware groups, so we potentially prevented something that could have been, you know, disruptive. We talked about compliance stuff. I think that's always a strong aspect to say we're identifying things or monitoring things. So something that came up with compliance in the past that I've had to deal with was the question of, hey, one of the compliance requirements was, how are you actively like reviewing these things to make sure nothing's going wrong? And, you know, at the answer, it's like, well, isn't that what our tooling's for? Like, we build detections that are doing this in real time based on logic and things we look for manually, right? And the auditors were like, okay, you have an answer. Like, I felt like we checked the box. But it was a tough conversation to have because they're like, well, how do you know all that's working? And it's like, I mean, how do you know if things are working well, if there's nothing, like, how do you prove the negative, right? It's like always hard to do. But that's something from a compliance perspective, I think you can say, hey, we have certain things built into what we are concerned about from a compliance perspective, based on what the compliance requirements are concerned about and what we think are realistic threats to whatever it is that we do that we need to be compliant in. That you can say threat hunting is adding a level there, I think is also kind of an interesting perspective. And then also, it's hard to measure, but I think it's worth talking about to leadership, is that kind of adaptive defense that threat hunting is able to have. And you might be able to say something along the lines of, you know, we have some custom things based on our crown jewels, based on things that we deem critical, potentially, but also how quickly are you able to respond to emerging things? And this kind of comes down to a metric I really love, which is, hey, new report, new threat came out. It hit some big company, and looking at it, we already have threat hunts for these types of behaviors. And we actually hunt on them on a routine basis. So we're kind of covered. That's a really strong thing to have to say to leadership to show effectiveness, that are good outcomes from a threat hunting program. So I'll kind of pause there. I know I kind of just throw a bunch of things out there, but yeah, anything else anyone wants to add, go for it.
Well,
I was going to say that about the compliance thing, about talking about expectation or not expectation, but like, you know, how can you prove this is wrong, or that it's working? I mean, even if there is no logs or evidence that something is actually happening in your environment, like if you don't have an incident, I mean, isn't that where the evidence of, you know, hey, we have pen testers, hey, we run emulations, right? Because part of the job is also identifying visibility gaps, right? I mean, and hopefully that would check the box even further, not just, hey, you know, we're monitoring this stuff. But at the same time, you know, you say, you may ask, you know, how are we testing these and so on? Well, we emulate. We emulate the activity to make sure that our detections are accurate. But, you know, nothing bad has happened in the past.
No, one of the things, I was going to bring up, Blue Optics made a great point that I missed earlier that I capitalized on, was, you know, you basically aligning your efforts for the threat hunting with organizational long-term goals. Like, it's always very good to understand your organization to the point where they are, you know, these are the defined goals that they talk to and they probably do their own reporting on. And if you find ways to incorporate threat hunting into that process or what, you know, you can add value to that is always a huge win, right?
No, it's a great point. And tying that into, you know, sometimes us security professionals can get into environments and kind of have this understanding of how something should work, but it doesn't necessarily align with what the business purposes are, or maybe the security part is thinking too much security and not about business practice. And I personally openly have ran into that buzzsaw quite a few times. And the adaptation of understanding how to understand the expectations from leadership of what your threat hunt program could provide, you know, a lot of the things I think from at least my experience of kind of standing one up or trying to find a way to get dedicated resources to do this is actively showing that one, you're aligned in what you're trying to accomplish with the general goal of your security organization. But I think the second one, the most biggest one there is keep the needle moving. And there's a lot of ways to do that with threat hunting, like harken back to what I mentioned about like the metrics and the data points that you can gain from that. If you keep the needle moving, it, you know, just from my own experience, that keeps that conversation rolling. And you'd be surprised that, you know, aligning with the business practices and continuing to evolve and show the deliverables, you know, not just be something that's out there in the back. Oh, we spent money on a tool. It's dying in a closet, or one guy's growing cobwebs because it's the only guy you got banging his head against the wall trying to hunt, right? If you can show the deliverables, even small ones, even big ones, you know, you can separate them. You know, these are our target focuses. These are our nice to haves, et cetera. Moving that needle is really what I've experienced that leadership wants to see. And from there, you're going to get a lot of success.
Yeah, I completely agree there. So, you know, when you talk about it from that perspective, how does threat hunting itself kind of affect the confidence from the leadership of the overall security program as a whole, right? Like what's something there that basically shows the effect it has on leadership, right? Based on the confidence. Is it, you know, you guys have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, a ton from my side, but I'll try to keep it short so we can work through the group here. And it actually, it's funny because this question came up perfect timing. So Blue Optics threw out another point, and the top point of that is, they had said a common misconception that can often discourage junior threat hunters is the belief that in order to classify a hunt as successful, the outcome should always be the discovery of something malicious. So this is a great point to understanding, like,
absolutely,
what is the effect of a threat hunting? What is the effect of a threat hunting program to the confidence of your security program? So tying both of these two together, that is spot on point. And that's where, when you talk about how does the confidence build your security program, it's not because you found something malicious per se. Finding the malicious thing is great, right? That is definitely the target goal. It's primary goal. But all of the other things that you can gain from this, and these are things that I've seen firsthand. So when you talk about building the confidence of the security program, you got to talk about the people that are involved in that security program, right? So like, just think about in a SOC and your security analyst or the young threat hunters that are involved, or you know, your operation side as a whole. As you're doing these threat hunts, you're learning things about your environment. It's organic. It's going to happen all the time. You're going to find new holes. You're going to find new gaps. You're going to understand things that are happening that look incredibly suspicious, but turn out to be absolutely normal because some odd way that your organization stitched something together 20 years ago or anything in between. So you're going to see the growth in your personnel, which is going to immediately enhance your security program. And as these individuals start going through these hunts, understanding data, understanding how to navigate through that more, you're going to start getting things, return results there of being able to react faster to an intrusion or a compromise, being able to mitigate faster because you're going to be able to stitch all of this stuff together with other parts of your security organization to make changes, to put in different things, to you know, apply different criticality to a vulnerability that maybe initially was thought to be low, but when you discover through your hunt that it's actually a lot more serious, or vice versa, you can help prioritize things. So like, you really see the confidence spin. I've seen this firsthand. Young analysts can grow wholeheartedly. Experienced analysts can get more into the weeds of your environment and close a lot of the gaps for you. And then all of that stuff can trickle through your whole program. And I think that's from my perspective, I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, confidence is organic when you look at threat hunting in a way that's not just about finding the malicious thing. There is a lot more to the what can come out of that than that.
Well, so it's funny. We've talked about not finding malicious as like not the core crux for like what threat hunters need to be doing is finding malicious all the time. Because if you think about confidence in a security program, if you're not finding things, then it can be good because it means a lot of your protective controls are probably working pretty good too, right? So talk about adding confidence. Like if you were finding a ton of things from threat hunting, that means there's a lot of things that have got past a lot of other things that maybe should be working better. And so you would think your confidence might go down. Like you might have more confidence in the threat hunting team, but you as a leader should realize why we keep finding so many things that nothing else is picking up, right? So there's that perspective. But the other thing is, one of the things is great if you do find things that's unique is a lot of people will focus on, we found this, let's go back, you know, destroy whatever it is, remove, remediate, all that kind of stuff, right? But because there's so much context in the process of threat hunting, you could possibly fill those gaps or holes in the process of finding things, right? So it kind of goes beyond threat hunting because you might have information you can share. You might have changes that can be communicated to controls or potentially more visibility you need to add so that you can then build out new things, which I think is good. But also, you know, the one last comment I have on the confidence perspective is anytime you're proactive, it should naturally add confidence. Like if you run a security team and your job, your idea of security is just responding to things, the confidence is really in our tools better work, right? Versus our people are doing good things. And if you have a proactive nature in an operation, you can say that, yeah, we have tools that are working alongside of our analysts, our people, versus our tools are working and giving things to our analysts and people. I think that's a completely different narrative, but I think naturally that should instill at least a little more confidence. So,
and let's go bypass ahead. The malicious altogether. Like, how confident in your team or the process would you be if you go down a path and all your threat hunters are saying like, hey, like, we're finding a lot of weird stuff. Like, what is going on here? And then think about the times where the answer is, well, either that's expected business, things that look weird, or say, hey, you know, like, that is suspicious activity coming from an admin that is ignoring best practices or something like that, right? Like, how confident would you be if you found... Not like, I'm not going to say insider threats because that puts a huge bad label on them. But if you're ignoring best practices,
yeah,
you're creating a vulnerability for your environment and for the company you work with. And if your hunters can find that before anything else does, I mean, I feel like that would just bump the stock up insanely. And yeah, it's not malicious, but it could just be lazy or lackadaisical.
Yeah. For sure. So I'm gonna like kind of thrust it out there a little bit and start moving down some of the other stuff we have to talk to because I know we only have about 20 minutes left or so. I think it's a great segue into the next kind of portion. So we're talking about across the organization. So like what does a hunt program or the outcome from a hunt program look like across the organization? So, you know, kind of kicking it off, you know, what do you guys think other teams outside of the security organization gain from threat hunting?
Yeah, so my perspective, we kind of touched a comment on a little bit with Lee, kind of actually touched on some things, but it was, I think there is the environment hygiene perspective because you're proactively looking at things. Like I've made this comment before, right? If you talk to an admin about something wonky or weird that you're investigating on a server and they log in and they see all these error logs that one they've never looked at before, they immediately agree with you, like, oh, something is going wrong, even though those could have been going on forever and it's not causing a problem or whatever that is, and it's not related. But because you're proactively looking at things, environment hygiene naturally just gets better, right? You're finding weird system errors, potentially performance issues, but also because you're looking for behaviors that adversaries use, a lot of times adversaries already have stolen credentials, which then make users appear to act abnormal to their normal behaviors. So from an insider threat perspective, becomes a very strong case indirectly, right? Like, it's funny when people are like, hey, how do you, you know, find insider threats? There's some unique things specific to the business that makes an insider threat. But I feel like if you're looking for advanced persistent threats that want to persist in an environment for long periods of time or learn about the environment, they'll look like insider threats. So you're kind of doing it as well. And then also, I think people can have a stronger confidence in their business processes or applications. So the different teams that manage those things, when they deploy and manage those, because if they're working with a threat hunting group, they can help drive types of hunts or detections or things about that process that can make them feel comfortable that it's even more secure than based on how they tried to design it, right, or implement it, which is good. And then last but not least, I talked about environment hygiene, but there's a big thing that always comes up that I found when looking for things, and talk about cleaning up like dormant accounts or systems that don't either get removed from the network, or accounts that are just being used that were supposed to be retired and not. That activity shows up a lot in data that's usually not causing problems for someone to notice unless you're looking at the data, but can be glaring issues and potentially vulnerable to things because it's almost like an unmanaged asset at that point. It is always, I think, helps because whoever owns that account, whatever team, man, if something happens that uses that account in a bad way, it comes back to that team. So you're kind of helping them out in that perspective. So thoughts there.
I'm going to kind of jump to a non-technical answer, I guess. But what about a good working relationship? Talking about, you know, hey, we received this intel from the intel team. We made it actionable. Whether we found something or not, just having that communication open with other parties is huge. Like, if you can ask someone about, you know, a subject matter expert about what this expected activity might be, I mean, that means a lot to other organizations. And I know it seems kind of like a human win, just, or like hubris maybe, but if someone asks me, or anytime someone asks me and approaches me as a subject matter expert, immediately you like feel good about yourself and you're like, I like this person. I'm ready for this question. If you're finding these things as a threat hunter and you're openly communicating and reaching out for advice to other people, they might start really, and going back to that confidence again, not only appreciating your work that you're doing, but also getting rid of that old stigma of, you know, SOC analysts or threat hunters are just spying on you. You know what I mean? Like, if you can knock down that barrier and talk to teams and build up a rapport that you're just trying to learn with that air, then I think it makes you a lot more approachable and lets people want to talk to you more and so on. I know that's kind of weird, but that's what I would see.
That's a great point, Lee. And just to kind of expand on that a little bit, we talked earlier about how, you know, the security department, your threat hunt team, things like that, they have to understand the business side. And I think that it probably tends to go a lot of times untouched that the other organizations necessarily understand what you're trying to accomplish from a security perspective. And I think from a threat hunting side, when you have a threat hunting program, you tend to ask the deeper questions. You tend to dig in the data a lot farther. So you're going to come up with more abnormal things. They're not text really the standard. Yeah. So you're going to have to get in there and talk to these other departments probably more often. So you develop that relationship you just talked about, but you can also start expanding on them. Then they can start understanding what you're actually trying to accomplish in a lot of ways, right? So you can bridge the gap from the other side of the river, which I think is a good point.
No, I like that. So, I mean, obviously, there is value for the outcomes across the organization as far as relationship building and what others might care about. Where, I mean, you think about other groups and organizations usually are tied more to the business and the revenue than security itself, right? So what you can do or what actions you would do to protect the company as far as unique threat hunts tied to those groups is good and those relationships are strong. But I mean, when you think about security ops, right? What role really should threat hunting play within security operations in general?
You want to kick this one off, Lee? You want me to?
No, I'll let you take it. I got to think of it.
Okay. So, that's one I'm overwhelmingly passionate about just because I think I'm idealistic. I think that there's such a golden opportunity for how, like, threat hunting, in my opinion, should always be part of security operations. Always. I will probably die on that hill, but let me argue my stance. The gaps in the way that you can use threat hunting as a platform and as a focus to stitch together other things you're trying to accomplish from your operations standpoint, I think are just way too valuable. And they're so organic that you don't really even have to focus on these extra things you're doing for your operations center, like finding gaps in visibility, understanding where you might not have things to detect certain things. Like maybe you don't have the right kind of detections up and your threat hunt finds those holes, and it's automatically easy to pass to whatever groups or whoever is focused on kind of shoring those things up. And it's active. It's always happening, right? Because it's just organic as part of your hunt that you are likely to find if you have a gap in visibility. You're likely to see if you found something malicious, you're able to track back that maybe you didn't have a detection in place, or maybe the things you had in place to stop that were faulty or failed, whether it be detection or some kind of a security functionality that you put in place, whatever depth that might be. And this all happens naturally. So like having that part of the security operations center is vital, in my opinion. It enhances everything else so much because you're not relying on people that have very specific focuses in different areas to try to find these things. You're really able to do it organically. And then you can hand it off to the individuals and then, you know, work from there, however your leadership or management might think to prioritize what thing needs to be done over what. But it's just, it's a no-brainer for me. I'm a stern believer that it's got to be part of SecOps, and it really does play a vital role, especially as you mature in your SecOps.
I mean, absolutely. It's content or it's detection engineering with a different lens, right? You're trying to just improve. If everyone's in the same boat, rowing in the same direction. Like Tom said, the goal is to increase your organization's security posture. It's not to find the malicious before the detection does. You know, it's just everyone looking out for the same bad person in different ways. So going back to that idea of the utopia, you would have those, you know, once again, everyone hunting for the bad or improving detections. Threat hunting can lead to improved detections. New detections could be led to whitelists and organizations understanding your organization a lot better than at the beginning, and just refining that. And honestly, it's an easy way to find that tribal knowledge and document it. Like, think about, I mean, I remember even working in a secure operations center early on. I don't know how many cases I ran into, like, that's just the way it is. That's just, you know, that's benign. That's benign, so on. But never diving into why it's benign. Going through a threat hunt, identifying not anomalous activity, expected activity, and documenting it in a report or adding it to an exclusion of a detection and saying this is why it's benign is huge. because then your day one analyst can come in, and if they ever see something like that again and they investigate and they say, oh, this was labeled benign in general and here's why, now we have that reasoning again. Reach out. Did anything change? Is this still benign? Yes. Okay. Double tapped. We're good to go. And I don't have to spend any more time on it versus diving into a hunt that you've traced in this rabbit hole that looks really, really weird. But at the end of the day, it's benign because of someone is holding that tribal knowledge close to their chest, or they just didn't document it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like we've kind of touched on it, but when I say the role of threat hunting and security operations, it's maturing the operation. So, you know, how are you understanding and finding the data? How are you shooting the gaps and finding what's hidden, right? Or assisting in higher quality alerting, right? Improving accuracy and relevance. And then, you know, also assisting or providing insights to inform strategic security decisions based on use cases. When I talk about like, how do you drive, hey, we have these tools, we may need to consider a different tool set or a different configuration or a different whatever. I think all about maturing the operation while also adding an additional layer of coverage, I think is really big there.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if there's anything to expand on necessarily here, but maybe there's some depth we want to apply to, you know, what should threat hunting produce for security operations? I think we talked about a lot of the possibilities, but what should be the mandates? What do you guys think?
So I approach this because of how I look at security operation from my perspective. And in security operations in general, it really should be you've got detection engineering, you've got your SOC analyst, you got your threat intel folks, and you have your threat hunters. And I feel like threat hunters, how they integrate or how they mature these other areas from a detection engineering perspective, I'll kind of like do it, you know, high level a little bit, but, you know, refine detection logic, right? You're able to help provide logic for detection engineers to start with if you want to actually build detections off of some of the behaviors threat hunters are looking at. I've always said detection engineers can build logic that they might be able to build detections that partially cover a behavior and not have like a high false positive rate versus leave the other part of the behavior to the threat hunters, right? So you get some real-time mix with threat hunting, a great solution. You're giving them the gaps of coverage, but you're also helping fill those gaps so they have more things to build off of from a data set goes. You're also giving them, if you can promote a hunt to detection, you're giving them tested detection rules, as well as some adversary emulation based on your own testing for them to work with. From a SOC analyst perspective, more actionable alerts. If you have something that you can able to pass to a SOC analyst or be part of that process, even when it comes to helping detection engineering, those alerts, the generator, you can do more with those, which helps reduce really the false positive nature in general. But because you're learning a lot through threat hunting, I think you also improve upon all the escalation criteria from us, what a SOC analyst might use to say, hey, this is something I need to escalate. Well, if you're kind of doing that with threat hunting, with your investigations, contextualization, and things like that, you're helping build that criteria that a SOC analyst can use, right? And then the knowledge transfer, that's huge. And then the threat intel piece, I mean, if you're finding things, obviously, with threat hunting, it's big. Because anything you find, now you're finding potentially new IOCs and TTPs to be shared with the threat intel folks to potentially share out. It helps with some attribution if that's something you're concerned about. Definitely helps handle emerging threats, right? Threat intel, they usually, if they get something emerging, they need to do something actionable with it. What's really great is that's where threat hunters can come in and try to turn that into actionable things to say, this just came out and this is how we're dealing with it. And then the data that you can get from a security operation, we've talked about it before. With threat hunting, there's more context usually there because of how the process works. So if you hand anything over to threat intel folks, they have more to work with. So it's a great feedback loop for intelligence in general. And so that's what I would say if you were to say, what can threat hunting produce for those different components that I laid out as some key components of a security operation? That's kind of how I see that sitting.
All good points.
I was like, I got nothing. That pretty much covers. Yeah.
It's the trophy. Gets the trophy, the single character executable trophy.
Yeah, every time.
Every time. Always yours. Reigning champ. So let's, kind of jump in to our, final section here. So let's talk about, from the actual threat hunter's perspective. You know, what does the perfect outcome look like for an actual threat hunter? So kind of kicking it off, like, what do you guys think the perfect, like, daily, weekly, monthly, et cetera, what that routine looks like for a threat hunter?
Man,
I'm going to say perfect outcome. You caught the APT, got the logs, employee of the year. Mike, you're up.
No, like, I think one of the what makes threat hunting I'm trying to find the right word, but what makes you anxious about being a threat hunter is just that. What if you don't stumble across that, right? Or where do I start? That's always a thing. So finding the perfect outcome, if there is any outcome, it's kind of almost like driven from understanding your priorities, right? If you understand like what's actually important, and are able to then build a proactive plan for like what you would maybe focus on this quarter or this month, what are some of the daily routine things that you would do as far as maybe schedule hunts to review or look at some top hitters for things to consider and see if there's anything you need to map the hunts to maybe prioritize other hunts over other ones, to weekly saying, yeah, we want to try to get out or test, so many hypotheses, to monthly. So it kind of is revolved around the work, I guess, for like the perfect outcome for the threat hunter. Because there's nothing worse than if, from at least my perspective as threat hunter, is just reacting to things all the time. God, I hate that, where it's like, I don't know what to do and there's not really a plan to tell me that. So I'm just kind of ad hoc reacting to whatever kind of flows my way. That's kind of stressful. And also you don't really know how to consistently produce. And consistency is kind of important for a program, especially from a leadership perspective, to say things are working as they should, right? But if you have that priorities and a plan, I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, or even know how to ask the right questions, right? Like, I think you run into that all too when you're kind of flying free and there's really no structure. There's a thing there too that this is again my perspective. Please don't take this as gospel. It's just kind of where my mindset is. When I look at how I want a threat hunter to kind of react, I want reproducible results, right? So I want structure that can be routinely met, right? So you can remove some of that ad hoc. And in doing that, you can do it in a way that doesn't have to make it a very stringent delivery point, right? Because there's a lot of variables going into any given hunt or any given attempt to build a hunt or even develop a hypothesis. And you can't really stitch necessarily like a time frame to it per se, but you want to set up you want to be in a place where you're looking at it from a threat hunter's perspective, where I have deliverable results. So you're going to have success points, which is going to just encourage you to continue forward, right? And as from a manager thought process, because I went through that a little bit, having it measurable in a way that can be exceeded is always a good thing, right? So you set those standards of the threat hunter has these repeatable things that they're hitting. So it becomes less ad hoc. There's more structure around it. And they can excel beyond that because they can think outside of that box because you set it up in a way that is, so it's free form, but structured. Does that make sense?
No, you touched on something I think is a great highlight. And you said like predictable results, like as the daily grind of a threat hunter and things that you definitely want to see is you don't want to run the same hunt and the results look drastically different than the previous set, because now you're wondering what's changed, what's going on, why, but there's nothing better, especially when you want to try to potentially build a detection. But if not a detection, you might be able to even slightly start to automate some things where you run a threat hunt and you see the same kind of consistent noise. So you know when you run something, what stands out from that. Because the idea is you're going to have data to look for. And that predictability that you can kind of build into your daily or weekly routine and have good documentation to support it so it benefits the team in general, I think is a huge outcome for a threat hunter.
I've I find, and once again, I think this is my weird brain going as well. I think the perfect routine will have to include a part of, or include a time and place for learning, and improving your skills. Because as a threat hunter, just spending time in a tool, running constant queries, and like you said, poorly reacting to all these things, it just drains you, right? This repetition, repetition. Don't get me wrong, it doesn't. I don't want to sound like I'm arguing against Tom's predictable outcomes or predictable, but
Oh, I meant less predictable and more reproducible, right? So like measurable results that you can hit, you know what I mean?
oh yeah, I mean, for that use ChatGPT. No, but. Just kidding. Gotta call that out. But like, in having that time and space to improve the craft, improve your skills, just break away from the data. Because don't get me wrong, I know we said the data is very important, but being able to step aside or step back and big picture it from time to time is extremely
Yeah,
important as well.
it is.
Saying, this is what I'm doing. I'm learning. I've improved these skills, scripting, hunting, whatever the case may be. And this is how I'm applying it, and having that time and space to improve your own craft.
That's huge. That's a really good closing, like nail on it, Lee, is from a threat hunter perspective, you want to be able to feel like you're growing, you're developing, you're learning, you want to overcome challenges, you want to have success points and not get caught into just run-of-the-mill, repeatable over and over again and burnout, right? And I think there's a lot of opportunity in threat hunting to be able to constantly hit those wins for yourself as a professional.
So I'm gonna stop talking then, because I don't want to ruin
So, yeah, I think everything we kind of talked about from the perfect outcomes, I'm really hoping the people that listen to this really kind of see how complex outcomes can be when you look at who your target audience is or how you can play, but also understand that there's a lot that threat hunting has to offer than just finding bad, right? From an organizational perspective, from a security perspective, there's a lot of value there. And that's why a lot of times people have a hard time, one, building a program because they're not building it to those types of outcomes they want to have, and also finding the people that are really good fits for those types of roles to do those things when it really just takes just the right mindset, understanding those things. So for those that joined, appreciate, Blue Optics, love the comments. Gonna give a call out to you here. I think they definitely added to some of the things we were saying and good insights. But I really want to thank everyone else for joining. Once again, we love talking shop with friends and colleagues. So if you like what you hear, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And leave good reviews if you can. It helps others discover and join the conversation as well. We do a 30 to 45 minute episode that kind of hits the top news topics, intelligence reports, write-ups, whatever. We try to get those out on Wednesdays to kind of have threat hunting things. And we dive in a little bit. And we're trying out different time slots to see how we can get best fit people's schedules to participate as much as possible. So we'll probably put a poll or survey on LinkedIn where we usually put some things out there to see how we can get a best fit for this because we definitely love the engagement. And I think that kind of closes out this episode. So once again, I appreciate everyone for joining.
Happy hunting.
Happy, happy hunting.